ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Booger McFarland and Kevin Agande.
And welcome to the College Football Podcast. It is November 10th, Wednesday. Kevin Agande with you. Booger McFarland will be joining us in a moment. We've got a really good discussion about the DEFCON teams. Three specific programs where there was a lot of excitement heading into the season, and all three of them have fallen apart, and the inability to close and motivate and what's next. Two of them have made news with coaching changes this week. So we will get into it with Boog. Also get his thoughts about Michigan being ahead of Michigan State. Boog has some strong statements about that. Also, we talk a little bit about concerns for Alabama right now, coming off that game against LSU and what's ahead for them. Soft week this week, but then close out with Arkansas and Auburn. Before we talk to Booger, two things I want to mention. First, watch NBA Today, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app. Or listen to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. And listen to a phenomenal podcast, the newest one on ESPN, Swagoo and Perk. It's led by Marcus Spears, Swagoo, and Kendrick Perkins, Perk. There are new episodes every Tuesday morning. The feedback, of course, on the show, no surprise, has been phenomenal because they keep it real the entire time. Check them out. Swagoo and Perk. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Right now, listen to Boog and me talk about the college football week and our reactions to the second release of the rankings. Great to have Booger McFarland join us here on the College Football Podcast this Wednesday. Let's button some things up here, Boog. You had Maryland straight up against Penn State, and you and Taylor taking the L over the weekend. How we feeling?
I can't remember that. Did I have Maryland?
Taylor, did he have Maryland?
Confirmed, he did have Maryland, unfortunately, for everyone.
Yeah, you know, Kev, sometimes you eat the bear, sometimes the bear eats you, man. Kind of how it goes.
That's a good approach. That's a really good approach.
Yeah.
And right now, you know who's feeling that right now? That's Michigan State. After coming off that emotional win against Michigan, losing to Purdue, they're the team that dropped in the second release of the rankings, which came out Tuesday night. Here's the latest. If you don't know, let's just go top 10. Georgia 1 hasn't moved. Alabama 2. Oregon moving up to 3. Ohio State moving up. Cincinnati moving up. Michigan at 6. Michigan State at number 7. Oklahoma on the bye. Notre Dame at 9. Oklahoma State at 10. Everybody's talking about it. I do want to get your thoughts here, especially where it felt like head-to-head mattered with Oregon ahead of Ohio State in the first release of the rankings. That stayed the same. But then Michigan State, 10 days after beating Michigan last night, the committee feeling that Michigan should be higher. And the committee chair, Iowa AD Gary Barter, saying there was a long debate. Michigan, we felt, was the better team. If you look at all the numbers and how they stack up, your thoughts, even though Michigan State less than 2 weeks ago beat Michigan, that the head-to-head does not matter when it comes to this ranking?
Well, it's a joke, first of all, because both teams have one loss and one team beat the other team, yet the team that beat the team, Michigan State beat Michigan, now they're ranked behind them. It just doesn't make any sense, Kev, and I think in a day and age where we try to quantify every single thing in our lives, from variabilities and numbers to percentages and analytics, this doesn't make sense. Like, can you help me help America make this make sense? Because I can't. I've been trying to wrap my brain around it all morning. The committee, I thought, did a really, really good job of keeping Oregon ahead of Oregon State. We've talked about that win on this program for a long time.
Oregon over Ohio State, yeah.
Yes, Oregon over Ohio State, thank you. And then they move Cincinnati up. So Cincinnati is right on the outside, on the precipice of getting into the college football playoff. But for the love of God, Kev, the fact that they have Michigan, a team that really hasn't, I mean, Michigan hasn't beaten anybody that I would say, like, what's their signature win? How can you quantify, how can you come up with a formula or come up with a theory that they need to be above Michigan State? And I think that's why America is in an uproar this morning.
I will say this. The committee last week got everybody talking when they had Cincinnati number 6. And the way the weekend played out, at one point you're like, okay, the committee knows a thing or two because they survived. If the kid, young man from Tulsa, Davis Brin, decides to not go down on that third down and scores, they're now going for two potentially to tie the game up, right? And you're just sitting there wondering, and you and I looked at that play on fourth down. It looked like he crossed the plane, but it's hard to reverse the ball when you called on the field as a fumble. So they looked smart there, having Cincinnati at six and now at five. I just don't understand. The head-to-head is the difference. And I get what they're saying, that if you look at certain metrics, and Michigan State has played a lot of close games leading into it, but Michigan State beat Michigan. Like, and it's one spot, and it'll sort itself out in the next couple of weeks. I get it, but there's just, it's a head scratcher to me with you, with a lot of people that watched it last night. And
well, hold on one second. Hold on, because everybody continues to say the same thing. Well, it'll sort itself out. Well, why are we having the rankings now then? Let's just have them at the end of the year and then just sort it out then. Like, why are we doing this ranking show every single Tuesday night? Why is Joey Galloway and Reese Davis and David Pollock and Kirk Herbstreit going to New York and on a Tuesday night and sitting there watching basketball and waiting until the first game is over and doing the ranking show? If it's going to get sorted out at the end of the season, and why in the hell are we reacting to this every week? So don't give me that about, hey, it's going to sort itself out. This is supposed to matter every single week, and right now it's not. So I don't want to hear the BS about, yeah, it's cool now, the metrics, and it'll play itself out at the end, trying to give the committee a pass. No, I cannot give them a pass right now, because this matters every single week. It's the reason why we build a show. ESPN builds a TV show around this college football playoff rankings every week. It matters.
Where would you put then Michigan State after the loss of Purdue? Would you put them at six and then Michigan at seven? Would you drop Michigan? Because it is fascinating that if you want Michigan State over Michigan, right, then what do you do with Oklahoma off the bye? Do you keep Oklahoma there? Do you put Michigan State at six, Michigan at seven? Is that what you would do?
I don't care where you put Michigan and Michigan State, but Michigan State needs to be above Michigan. So you can put them at 15 and 16. It doesn't matter. Michigan State still needs to be above Michigan. The place you put them doesn't matter. But the fact, let me ask you this. How would you feel if you looked at the rankings and you saw Ohio State at three and Oregon at four?
I'd be
How
furious.
Would you feel? Exactly. Yeah. So you should be furious about Michigan State.
I can't tell you.
Kevin, you got this really laissez-faire attitude. Like, yeah, we'll figure it out later. How about stand up for the little guy? Stand up for Sparty. If you don't want to stand up for Temple, stand up for Sparty. Okay, let's do that.
I never thought Michigan State would be referred to as the little guy when you look at how big that school is and their reputation. So I'm sorry that I didn't come out with rage and raising my voice like you. I do like ticked off Booger, which is good. It actually helps me in this conversation. As we take a look at, I do want to talk to you a little bit about Alabama for a second, because credit to LSU in Tuscaloosa. I think everybody thought that, you know, four touchdown spread, Bama is going to naturally cover it.
Not everybody.
And that game
thought that.
Came
First
down
of all,
to the end.
Listen, stop right there. Stop right there. You know, I'm just going to disrespect my alma mater with me listening. All right. Not everybody thought that. I thought this game would be a hard fought game and we'd probably be within 17.
Within 17. How dare I? How dare I say four touchdowns? You were saying two touchdowns.
I mean, I'm being a realist.
They played hard. To me, for Alabama, though, the concern is when you look at this team specifically, the talent is there. There's just the maybe we and every week we say somebody deserves a mulligan. They rush for a total of 6 yards.
Right.
You know, LSU, if LSU had any, and Max Johnson's a guy that's trying to figure this out, but if they had an experienced quarterback and the ability to, I felt like, punch it in there, they're winning that game. Like they had a couple of tries as well late in that fourth quarter. You were watching, I know, closely. I'm a little concerned about Alabama. Your thoughts about coming off that game and what you saw from this offense?
I kind of equate what LSU did against Alabama very similar to what Kansas City and Green Bay had going on. Jordan Love if Aaron Rodgers plays in that game, I think the Packers beat the Chiefs and they beat them pretty good. If LSU had a quarterback with some experience, more veteran savvy quarterback, a quarterback that just plays better, I think they beat Alabama by a touchdown or more, Kev. Like, that's how bad LSU outplayed Alabama. As far as the Alabama aspect is concerned, here's what I'll say. Their defense is still really good, not perfect. They've morphed into kind of what we think of the Kansas City Chiefs is like, and I'm not saying that their defense is that bad, but their defense is going to give up 20-some points a week. They're just counting on their offense to be able to score 40. And when their offense doesn't perform to that level, now Alabama looks very vulnerable. Like, their offensive line did not play well. They couldn't run the football. And so now you're putting everything on Bryce Young and Jameson Williams, and you're saying, hey, we're going to just throw it over your head and outscore you. That's not how Alabama has been built so far. They've been able to be a really, really balanced football team. Brian Robinson run the football, but they got away from that. And you got to give LSU a lot of credit because they went to Tuscaloosa and they sacked Bryce Young, what, 4 or 5 times? They shut down the running game and they made big, bad Alabama look very vulnerable, very similar to how A&M did. So I don't know if there's a blueprint out there, but I think the key to beating Alabama is you got to take advantage of their protections. They have what I call, Kev, NFL protections. And two teams have been able to take advantage of them. That's A&M and LSU, blitzing, playing man coverage, getting after Bryce Young. The offensive line is big. It's not overly athletic. And so I think that if you're a team out there and you're gonna go against Alabama, a la Georgia, a la maybe Ohio State in a college football playoff game, you got to feel really good about your chances against this team.
I mean, Bryce Young had over 300 yards passing, but Robinson, 18 yards on the ground. And I'm just stunned by it. I'm stunned by how it played out. And here's the other thing. They've got New Mexico State this weekend. That's one of those games. They're favored by over 50 points. That's one of those games, Boog, right? Like, you just don't want to get hurt. Like, how are you getting better in a game like this, right? Just don't get hurt, because you close out the season against Arkansas and an Auburn team in the Iron Bowl on the plains. And I would be a little concerned and worried about where Alabama is right now, because when it comes to the preparation, we're not going to question Nick Saban, but can they execute? Can they execute on the defensive side? And when the season started, we believe that this was one of the most talented defenses Nick Saban has ever had in Tuscaloosa.
I'll agree. I'll agree. The defense is talented, but like they aren't dominant like Georgia. They're good, but they're vulnerable in the back end. They blow too many coverages. We saw them blow coverages against Tennessee. They blew a couple against LSU. They aren't as buttoned up, I guess, as Nick Saban would want them to be. I think Georgia's got the best defense in the country. Alabama's a top 10 or 15 defense. They're just not Georgia. And so when you look at this team, Kev, they are good, but they aren't the Alabama we're saying, hey, nobody can beat them.
Yeah.
They aren't that team. Whereas right now, and I've heard you say this before, there are a couple of things that you can count on in life right now. Death, taxes, and Georgia's defense. Like, those things you can count on. I don't really know if we can say Alabama's offense is in that category. I don't think so. Definitely their defense is not. So, yeah, they are more vulnerable than we thought they were probably 6 or 8 weeks ago.
We will see how this plays out in the next couple of weeks, of course. New Mexico State at home, and then they're at home against Arkansas, a team that, you know, it was the darling in September. We've kind of forgotten about them, but they will punch you in the face if you forget about them. So we will see the physicality next weekend. All right. You know, before we go to our ABC games, because we've got three really good matchups, I want to give a shout out to UTSA, the Roadrunners, at number 23 in the rankings, breaking in. They've got Southern Miss over the weekend. Jeff Traylor, that team is 9-0. I love the running back's name, Sincere McCormick, who's got over 1,000 yards. So shout out to the Roadrunners of UTSA in a season, Boog, where trying to stay undefeated is a huge accomplishment, considering every single week we're seeing a top 10 upset, 7 straight weeks. Good for them and that program and where they're at and what they're doing. And they can go 13-0 and Conference USA champs, but they're not going to be in the playoff conversation. They should be celebrated at least for what they've done so far. So shout out to them. Let's get to our ABC games here. and start out the gate with Michigan, number six in the land, at Penn State. And Penn State's not ranked. Penn State's got wins against the number 17 team in the country and number 18 team in the country. I think it's ridiculous that they're not ranked, because if you're going to take injuries into context like the committee has, that played a huge role with Sean Clifford and why they lost some of these games. They played tough against Ohio State. And you're shaking your head. You're like, yeah, you're not going to hear. They deserve to be in the top 25.
Listen, the rankings really don't matter, because we're going to figure it out at the end of the season anyway. So why are we concerned about the rankings now? Like, let's just figure it out. Hey, who cares? No problem. It doesn't matter. They lost to Illinois, who ran the football 99 times, Kev. So here's what I'll say. I'm not concerned about Penn State not being ranked. Here's what I am concerned about. Can Penn State stop the run? Because if you couldn't stop Illinois' run, hey, Kev, Michigan right now, Michigan just ran another play, and it was a run play, by the way.
Yes.
Okay? They're going to line up and run the football, and they're going to test the will of James Franklin's team. So I am so curious to see if this Penn State defense, have they learned a lesson? They gave up 300-plus yards or whatever it was to the Fighting Illini and the Fighting Brett Bielemans. Have they learned a lesson? Are they ready to stick their nose in the meat grinder? Because if they're not, Kevin, it's going to be a long day. And you got Haskins and Corm and those guys, they're going to come downhill. So that'll be the key. This may be the fastest game of the day. Like, you and I may be doing a one-hour feel after this game. I got a feeling
right
that these two teams are going to run the football at each other all day long.
You could be right. And by the way, Blake Corm dealing with an injury, so maybe the workload goes to Haskins. The other side, Sean Clifford, like, it's a fascinating stat. He's 4-0 against Michigan and Michigan State in his career. The thing is, though, we talk about Michigan can run the football. Penn State cannot run the football.
Correct.
And they've got to figure that out. It can't just fall on Clifford and Clifford's arm this game. This comes down to one thing. Like, can they get Jahan Dotson double-digit touches? Because they're going to need to stay on the field and move the chains.
Do you have any faith that they can get the ball to five double-digit times? Like, I have zero faith.
Really?
Zero. Absolutely zero. I mean, it's the same thing we said against Ohio State. Now, I'll give Penn State credit. If the Penn State team that showed up against Ohio State shows up against Michigan, they got a chance to win.
Mm-hmm.
But if the Penn State team that showed up against Illinois shows up, hey, it's Katie bar the door and good night.
Now, that's a noon kick on ABC. The line is even, which I find fascinating as we get into that game later on in the weekend. And, of course, Blake Corm dealing with an injury. Can Cade McNamara not make mistakes and have a clean game? If he can, that's a big difference here. Our middle game at 3:30 is fascinating because we got number four Ohio State at home. But guess who's coming into town? The team that's got two top three wins, and that is number 19, Purdue. And who knows what's going to happen with Purdue, because yeah, they could be the team that we saw last week against Michigan State and O'Connell. I mean, Aiden Connell and what he did, against that defense, David Bell. Like, how do you anticipate a game like this, especially with Ohio State trying to get back to the running game?
Well, I think this is going to be a high scoring affair. I think if you look at Aiden O'Connell, I mean, he threw for 500 plus yards last week, Kev. I mean, it was like it's the fifth most yards in Big Ten history. And I think that if you're Purdue and you're this offense, you got to say, okay, we're going to need to score 40 to win. All right, we need 40. And we got to feel pretty confident based on what we did against Michigan State and a defense that was led by a defensive-oriented head coach, Mel Tucker. So Aiden O'Connell's got to be looking his chops. And if you're C.J. Stroud and you're this Ohio State offense, you got to say, hey, it's really simple, guys. You know, we're going to line up and we're going to say, hey, we got to put up 50 points in this game. Okay. It's time to hit our stride. It's time for Travion Henderson, Smith and Jigba, the guys to get rolling and get this offense going to the next level, because they need to play their best ball. Purdue has beaten Ohio State in the past. And I remember who was it, Rondale Moore, when he was there. Like, they've caught him slipping before, Kev. So they can't go into this game saying, hey guys, this is Purdue. They've got three losses on the season. They're not going to be able to hang with us. They got to bring their best foot forward. But I think this comes down primarily, can the Purdue offense score? Because we've seen team put points up against Ohio State. If they can keep this game close, and by close, I mean in the high 30s, low 40s, then I think we'll have a game in the fourth quarter. But I still would favor Ohio State based on their explosiveness on the offensive side of the football, and based on the way that C.J. Stroud is playing right now.
It's going to come down to one guy, and your guy, and that is Travion Henderson, right? He's the one guy that we know in the building that can run the football. Purdue doesn't run the football. Can they get David Bell double-digit touches like we saw in the Michigan State game? And also, this is one of those things, Boog, as the back scratcher's out. Love that. Love that. That's part of our conversation.
Well, it's easier for me to scratch my own back than to have my wife come in here and complain about scratching my back. So she bought me back scratchers. I have one in every room in the house.
Every room in the house? Really?
Well, let me see. One, two. Yeah, just about every room. Yeah.
I've never heard that before. I've never heard a guy having back scratchers at his access everywhere. That is,
yeah. It's called
every
having
day
mobile.
I learned something about you.
Yeah, buddy. It's called mobile back scratchers. They have the ability to morph and move around the house.
If it's mobile, then the back scratcher is going with you. It's not, you don't have one in every single.
Well, I mean, let me see. There's one in the living room. There's one in my bedroom. There's one in here. So that's three. I don't think there's one in the bathroom. So maybe not every room. I probably got four or five around the house.
Okay, let's move on. I'm not sure what to say to that. Like, so
don't say anything.
Ohio State, you know, I think if you looked at this game a few weeks ago, you were like, well, let's not forget what Ohio State has at the end of the season, Michigan State and Michigan, right? Mm-hmm. Ryan Day, with Purdue winning last week, Ryan Day, it works out for Ryan Day's messaging to the team. Don't even worry about Sparty next week. Don't even worry about the end of the season against that team up north. We've got a team that is dangerous when it comes to passing the football. And now Michigan State can't defend the pass. That's been their Achilles heel all season. I'm curious to see how Ohio State's back end and how they handle it defensively, because Purdue isn't going to run the football. They're just going to throw. At least 50 tosses for O'Connell in this game. Should be a good one. You talk about the Michigan-Penn State game being like a two-hour show, wrap it up. Purdue, Ohio State can go four. That's a four-hour game.
No question. Absolutely.
Stop the clock, move on, right? Our nightcap, we've got Notre Dame, and we don't often get Notre Dame here, which is great. Notre Dame, number 9 in the country, at Virginia. A Virginia team at 6-3 that can put up a ton of points, that loves passing, and Brennan Armstrong, 27 touchdowns, 8 picks. This game is a 5.5-point spread, and Notre Dame is one of those teams, Boog. They haven't looked like a dominant team, but mm-hmm. they just quietly keep on winning each and every week here. How do you view this matchup?
So here's what's happening with Notre Dame. Remember earlier in the season, you heard me say this several times. Notre Dame's offensive line was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Kev, that offensive line has gotten better. And so now they finally have an identity. They can run the football a little bit. And now Jack Cohn can settle in the play action pass. He looks better. It's amazing how much better they look when they can get back to doing what they like to do, which is run the ball, play action pass. Marcus Freeman's defense is now kind of settled in a little bit. They know what to expect from him. He knows what to expect from his guys. And I think Notre Dame is going to wind up being what Notre Dame always is, Kev, which is what, a 10 or 11 win team who's right on the cusp of the playoff but may not get in. But that's what they're going to be. And they're going to look back on that Cincinnati loss, and they're going to say, okay, if Cincinnati's in the playoff, we deserve to be right on the edge, but they're not going to get in. But this works out for Cincinnati, because if Notre Dame is 11-1 and Cincinnati's undefeated, that boosts Cincinnati's resume also. So I think Notre Dame is rounding in the form. They aren't quite as explosive as the team that put up, I forgot what they scored, 30-something against Florida State, but they are a better team because they're running the football. The defense is better. The identity is better. And I like where they are. And Brian Kelly's a good coach. Brian Kelly has the ability, Kev. I can't remember when he's had a bad team. Like, even going back to the Cincinnati days, when did BK have a bad? I can't remember. And so he's one of the better coaches in our country. He does a really, really good job. And he and Marcus Freeman have that team playing at a high level. I'd be surprised if this is a game in the fourth quarter between Notre Dame and Virginia.
Well, one thing we're going to know is Virginia's going to toss the ball and toss the ball and toss the ball. There is one guy that has kind of stepped up when it comes to they're not a team that has consistent explosiveness on Notre Dame's side, but Kevin Austin's mm-hmm. been really, really good for Jack Cohn and in spreading the field around, because let's not forget, Mayer's on that team and they got Kyron Williams. They have some weapons. We just haven't seen it come together for one complete game. I think it's going to be a really fascinating matchup here, because Yeah, SVP always talks about Virginia and big number 99 in the backfield. I love that they got a 99 in the backfield getting the ball. and when Scott Van Pelt does those highlights, there's nothing better when he talks about Virginia. We'll see what Armstrong can do. Each and every week, you know you're getting at least 35 to 40 points from the Cavaliers. So can they consistently do that against a Notre Dame team that likes to keep it in the 30s or below because it favors them? That'll be an interesting matchup in prime time there in Charlottesville. All right, let's get to the segment we do every Wednesday. Let's go to your DEFCON teams. And by the way, shout out to Mac Brown. Mac Brown and North Carolina, they were on the DEFCON hot seat last week, according to Booger McFarland. And then what does he do? He takes down undefeated Wake Forest.
Yeah, I mean, and listen, not only did he take down undefeated Wake Forest, Mac was a favorite in that game, which I'm not really sure how Vegas got to that point. But, hey, Vegas knows a little bit more than me, and so I'll give Vegas credit. But, yeah, good win by them. All right. Let's get it started with our DEFCON teams, Kev. And I'm going to come out the gate swinging. I think we have to start with a team that we've had on here before, which is not a good thing. And they're back again. The Nebraska Cornhuskers, DEFCON 1. DEFCON 1. Kev, I don't know what else I can say about Nebraska. Let's start with the fact that their head coach sounds like he took a pay cut a couple of days ago. They restructured the contract. That can't be a good thing when a head coach is taking pay cuts because they think you're not living up to your contract. But you have a team, Kev, that's really simple. They're 3-7. They have lost, what is this? They have lost 6 out of the last 7 games. They're not playing well. The fan base is starting to grow quite weary of the excuses, because we talked about the injuries. We talked about we got to play harder. We got to change the culture. Where none of that is work. None of it's work. And when your head coach starts taking pay cuts, that leads me to believe, Kev, that the next step is the head coach being gone. I hate to say this, but it has kind of been quite a disaster for the hometown kid to come home and for the expectations to be what they've been and him not to be able to meet those expectations. And here's what I'll say about Scott Frost. Scott had the opportunity, Kev, to take the Florida job. I know that. He had a chance to take the Florida job, and he didn't want that job because he thought going home would allow him time and room that the SEC may not allow him to grow and build a team. Well, that time is kind of growing thin in Lincoln, Nebraska, so I kind of feel bad for Scott.
Well, I will say this about the Scott Frost situation. Like, if you look at the numbers, they're brutal, right? 4 straight losing seasons, 15-27. Some of these scores, people will say, well, he's in many of these games, but where's that ingredient that you can't measure, right, Boog? That intangible in the third and fourth quarter? Like, where's that intangible in the third and fourth quarter where the team suddenly changes its attitude? They're not missing field goals. The defense gets the stop. The quarterback gets the first down and doesn't fumble. We haven't seen that. And some people compare it to Jim Harbaugh, where Jim Harbaugh was, you know, the beloved quarterback turning around Michigan, and then he took a pay cut. Here's the thing. We will say this about Jim Harbaugh, but we know Jim Harbaugh will at least win 8 games, right?
Yeah.
8 games a season. You're losing to your rival, but you still have some hope here. When you're 15-27 and you haven't beaten a team with a winning record, I think is it nearly 3 years? That's a huge problem. So he fires 4 offensive coaches, right? You know what he has to do here, Boog? He has to go the Mel Tucker route. So Trev Alberts gives him, you know, pay cut the same way we saw with Harbaugh, so he could stick around and try and turn it around. He's got to go the Mel Tucker route, and that is, I've now got to recruit around the country in the transfer portal. I cannot try to recruit a lot of, you know, high school kids at this moment. And from what I hear, their high school recruiting has not been well this season. He's got to go to the American. he's got to go to the lower divisions, or maybe like find a guy like at Wake Forest and Kenneth Walker, like Mel Tucker did, and pull some people and put this team together next year. I also want to see what he can do now with a completely different coaching staff on the offensive side and different quarterback. Because there's just something missing when it comes to a killer instinct with Nebraska in closing these games. We're way past that. Hey, they played Michigan State close. They played Ohio State close, right, Boog? Like, this is year four, an identity of a team and a program. What is it? We don't know yet under Scott Frost.
Well, and the issue, Kev, is you got to be able to recruit. And the high school football in Nebraska, it's okay. It's not good or great. And so where are most of your players going to come from? They're going to come from Texas, Florida, the surrounding states that are not named Nebraska. And so he's having a hard time getting those kids. This is not like when Tom Osborne could go and get Tommy Frazier from Florida and get some of these other kids to come all the way to Lincoln, Nebraska, just because you were playing in the Big 8 or the Big 12, whatever it was back then, and kids wanted to go be on TV. You can be on TV anywhere. Like you can be in a SWAC and be on TV, thanks to Deion Sanders. So you don't have to go to Nebraska anymore. And I think Nebraska is finding it very, very hard to get kids to show up. And as good as Scott Frost may be, because he was a really good coach at UCF, if you don't give him the right kids and the right ingredients, he's not going to win. And so their recruiting has to get better. Hopefully he can get that fixed. Otherwise, I think he may get one more year, and then after that, that's it.
What did he take advantage of at UCF? He took advantage of speed, right?
Yes, like, absolutely.
Where's the speed? He's got to find speed throughout the country. The transfer portal is one of those things that everybody talks about benefiting kids. I really think that Mel Tucker has figured it out. Where he is, Mel Tucker has said, I look at it like NFL free agency, right? What is our weakness? How do we focus? How do we turn it around? And it has been phenomenal for him. When you talk about a team last year that had two wins and no identity, he's got to find that speed throughout the country. And again, he's got to find a quarterback, because when he was at UCF, he found a magical quarterback, right? He found a way. Yeah, Mackenzie Milton figuring things out, and the dynamic offense. He could do that. I really believe he could do that at Nebraska. And that should be the first thing he has to focus on immediately here, because I think this is his final chance. This is Trevor Albert saying, listen, I'm going to give you a final chance. Because he doesn't get this final chance. He doesn't get another chance, I should say, if he's not, you know,
at Nebraska.
Scott Frost, the quarterback.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yep.
The same way Jim Harbaugh got that pass. But Jim Harbaugh still won. He had a winning record each and every year at Michigan. That's the thing. There are similarities, but there are a lot of differences when you compare both of them.
Yep. Agree to that.
All right. Let's go to your next DEFCON team.
Let's go with the Texas Longhorns. We are going DEFCON 2.
DEFCON 2.
And the only reason they're not DEFCON 1, Kev, is because Steve Sarkisian is in his first year. They've lost four in a row, Kev. They got ran off the field by an Iowa State team that really has kind of been a subpar team all season. I get it. Brock Purdy, Breece Hall, I understand those things. But you figure Texas, and with Steve Sarkisian's play calling, they'd be able to put up points. They'd be able to figure out how in different ways to get Bijan Robinson the ball. They've done neither. 7 points against Iowa State. And if you are the people at the University of Texas, those meddling people on the Board of Regents that always meddle in everybody's business, they can't be happy right now. Okay. They cannot be happy with 4-5, losing four in a row. And they got KU, West Virginia, Kansas State to finish the year. None of those are given. None of those. The way KU played Oklahoma, West Virginia, we know about Jared Daigie and Letty Brown, and Kansas State, we know what they do, especially in Manhattan. If you are the Texas Longhorns and you are Steve Sarkisian, and in your first year you finish below 500, I would have to say that is a disaster, and hopefully it doesn't happen.
Boog, they haven't recovered since the Oklahoma game, right?
Agreed.
That second half, having that lead, Caleb Williams comes in. And they haven't recovered. And this is the same thing in the same conversation with Nebraska. Where's that killer instinct? in the fourth quarter, right? You got all these leads. At least with the Iowa State game, it wasn't like heartbroken. The Longhorn fans could just be like, all right, at least I'm not setting up for a disaster in the fourth quarter where they're going to have my hopes up a little bit. I'm stunned at the way that team has fallen apart and cannot maintain leads in the fourth quarter. So it's, you bring up a phenomenal point, man. There is no given here with Kansas, West Virginia, and Kansas State the rest of the way. This is a test of, for Sark to say, who wants to stick around my program next year, right? I've got to figure it out right now.
Yeah, he's got to figure it out. And I think he will. But I'm just a little concerned because, like, who are you and what can we count on? You know, with Georgia, we know we can count on their defense. With Ohio State, we know we can count on their offense. And I can go on and on and down the list. What can you count on in Texas right now? Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley, their defense may be bad, but we can count on Lincoln Riley figuring out how to put up some points. What can you count on if you're the Texas Longhorns? And I think that's the thing that really bothers me.
And to your point, Boog, there's only one guy we know we can count on is Bijan Robinson, right?
Give him the ball.
And Bijan doesn't play defense. like he's just the only guy you could count on with the Longhorns. All right, your last DEFCON team.
Well, Kev, this one is going to hit close to home for you. I'm going with the Florida Gators. And again, we take it to the extreme, DEFCON 1.
DEFCON 1.
Kev, we are on the verge of something I never thought I'd say, is that Dan Mullen is on the precipice of, I don't know how they keep him any longer if he doesn't turn it around and turn it around quickly. Kev, they lost 4 out of the last 5. Mm. They got dump trucked by a South Carolina team that's played their third quarterback this season. He just fired the defensive coordinator and offensive lineman. An offensive line coach who he's known for 20 years. Like, he is severing relationships with people in order to save his job. And this is on top of the fact that when's the last time they beat a good team? When's the last time they beat a team, not only good, but a ranked team? Like, Dan Mullen, the guy that was supposed to be coming back home because he coached at Florida, I think with Urban Meyer, he was supposed to be coming back home. He went to Mississippi State. He was a quarterback whisperer with Dak Prescott. Coming back home, this has been a disaster. And the expectations in Gainesville are so much further than what he's achieving right now. I'm afraid that the Gator Nation and Gator faithful aren't going to be as patient as Nebraska is with Scott Frost. And he's got to turn it around and turn it around fast, Kevin. And I'm concerned because, yeah, you got Sam Houston or whatever, but then you finish with Mizzou and Florida State, two games that you could lose. And we could be looking at a Gator team that's 5-7. And that's coming off a season, that's coming off an off season where he said in the bowl game, we were getting ready for this season using the bowl game against Oklahoma. So a lot of people down here in Florida are not happy with Dan Mullen. I know your wife, who's a faithful Gator, is not happy with Dan Mullen. What do or where do we go with Dan Mullen, Kel? Because right now, I think he is about a centimeter from being on the bottom line at ESPN being let go.
Look, it's crazy that we are at this point, right? Especially what they did in the final three quarters of that Alabama game, right? And then you have Anthony Richardson getting hurt dancing in a hotel.
What was he doing? Like the waltz?
Wild. And then the post-game comments, like, and then not letting the players talk, like, Dan, I think confidence plays a huge role in anything that you want to be successful in. And Dan's confidence, and no one will debate Dan's confidence when he walks into a room. Dan knows that Dan is good at his job. And I think this is a major confidence hit for him because no one expected this. And then it's like, how are you going to react now, right? Everybody's got a plan, like Mike Tyson has said, until you get punched in the face. Well, Dan's taking a couple punches to the face now. And how is he going to respond? How's this team going to respond? Because I'm telling you, I came home on Saturday night, Sunday morning. My wife's a diehard Gator fan. She went there. And I heard every cuss word in the book. And I said to her, I said, Mom,
well, that's normal. I mean, give me something else.
this is kind of how this is our football season. When you follow the Eagles Temple in Florida, you're learning a lot of cuss words in the house, as my kids have. I will say this. I told her, I said, November 27th, Mon, like that could be really a bad game. That's Florida State. And we all know how Gator fans feel about that and Seminole fans feel about that. All right. Like, because Florida State's trending up, and where's the momentum with Florida? There is no momentum. Like, you can't have that performance against South Carolina. The easy wins are no longer easy. And that's what I find so stunning. Where's the defense and the Grantham stuff? A lot of people will say that should have happened weeks ago, right? And I appreciate Dan's loyalty. I just don't know if the answer is anywhere on this team in trying to figure out turning things around. And it's not good, man. It is not good. And Boog, you will appreciate this conversation. In the East, especially in the SEC East, no matter what, Florida will look on the other side and be ticked off about the success of LSU and Alabama, no matter what, just because. But their measuring stick has always been, we beat Georgia, we're good to go, we'll get to Atlanta. And it's been like that for a while. And for the gap to be as wide as it is right now, I think Florida fans are just stunned, especially what we saw in the SEC championship game a year ago. And since the shoe game against your boys in Gainesville last year, they haven't been right. They haven't, like, the team has been in a free fall.
Kev, I will agree. And I'll take it a step further. The gap between Georgia and Florida is wide as the gap between you and I when it comes to athletic ability and the commitment to working out. Like, the gap could not be further apart. And the fact that Georgia is dominant right now, the way I am dominant over you when it comes to those two things I mentioned, like, it's a long way away, Kev. And if you're Dan Mullen, how do you change it? If you're Kevin Negande, how do you change the fact that the guy you work with every Saturday is at 44 almost, I'm still a physical specimen, and the fact that
here we go, Taylor.
You can make fun of me that I do it riding a bike. The fact of the matter is, it doesn't matter how I do it. It's the fact that I still do it. So, Kev, you're right. The gap is wide, but you live with that same gap every day. So how can Florida close the gap, or should I say, how can you in Florida close the gap between me and Georgia?
Taylor, I'll say this as you are our witness here. Georgia is so good, Georgia doesn't have to talk about it. So if somebody has to talk about it, there's some insecurity that's going on right now. And then we'll also state here that I'm not the first round draft pick that played in the NFL. So the gap and the expectations are completely different. Right. So I never once do I come in and say, I'm going to be like Booger McFarland, the guy who's a first round pick.
Maybe you should. Maybe you should have that type of aspiration when you wake up every day. You know what? what would Boog do? What would Boog do?
This is what Boog would do. Boog would get up at 5 o'clock and lose the Dan Orlovsky and Peloton. I don't need to get up at 5 o'clock to know I'm going to lose the Dan Orlovsky. But you do that consistently every week.
We do it once a week, not every day.
I said consistently every week. See, there you go. You haven't denied that. I'm true, right? Hey, here's the crazy thing, Boog. When you look at the SEC East, though, to add to that, you see teams like Kentucky. You see teams like Tennessee trending up, feeling good. Gator fans, to them, that's unacceptable. Because even in the 90s, The Steve Spurrier bravado was like, hey, we're always going to be one up on Tennessee because of our press conferences, because our coach will always have a line and we always have that talent. So this is all new territory for Gator fans over the last couple of decades.
Think about this. Teams that are trending upward and at a higher level than Florida right now: Kentucky, Tennessee, Georgia. Not only are they all in the SEC, they're all in your side. Yes. The Eastern Division. That's got to make the Gator faithful feel a little uncomfortable.
Yep. And I'll bring this up again. I brought this up a few weeks ago. When you look at Florida, everything's cyclical, right? It's usually three dominant teams. And now you can throw in UCF too, because UCF success too, and making sure recruiting and what we talked about with Scott Frost. But it's always, you always have either Florida, Miami on top. Then you have the second team, which is really good, but not great. And then the third team is like the bottom part of the cycle coming back up. And it's really hard when you have Florida State struggling, Miami's trying to find its way struggling, that Florida cannot dominate the state right now. That is, to me, is the thing that stands out the most in this conversation. The cycle of that state and all three teams are mediocre at best. I can't recall that, because there's no matter what, one of those teams has always been on top while everybody else reloads. And
one do you think is going to come out of the shuffle? Look, if we're talking about all the teams in the state of Florida right now, we're talking about Florida, Florida State, Miami. Let's throw UCF in there before they claim another national championship. Which team do you think is going to come out of the pack and kind of nudge ahead consistently over a 2-3 year period?
You know what I'm going to say? And some fans, and I could hear Gator fans yelling at, I'm going to say Florida, just because I believe that Dan Mullen has allowed a down year to learn from it. And I believe in him more as a coach than I do with what Norvell's doing right now, what Manny Diaz, who knows about Manny Diaz's future, right? So I'm going to say specifically,
Manny's not going to be there a lot longer. Manny might be sitting between you and I next year.
Former ESPN coming back now. And yes, that's a great point. So there's instability. And that same conversation, Boog, we were having with Mike Norvell in the beginning of the season, especially after the first month. So there is, I think, still a mulligan toss to Mullen, which he deserves. And let's just ramp it up again. Let's figure out our quarterback situation. Let's find a way to get back on defense. I think the gap from Mullen to figuring it out is much shorter than where Florida State is as a program and Miami is a program. And that could, I don't want to say dramatically change, but Mullen's got to win on the 27th against Florida State. He's got to.
That's not a given either.
Exactly. And that should be a major concern for Gator fans as they close out the season. I got to give Mike Norvell a ton of credit too, because everybody left them for dead. That team plays hard for him. Travis Jordan has added some stability there. And then the one thing that Manny has, he has Van Dyke. The kid has been fantastic, the freshman at Miami. Like, he has found a quarterback there, whoever's the coach next year, where you could build off of that success over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and based on the fact that you said whoever the coach is, I got to believe you don't think Manny's going to be there?
I think you and I feel the same way, right? But they've got a lot of questions, especially in the athletic department, what the direction is for that football program moving forward. So I'll let you go, because I know you've got like an appointment to get on the Peloton if you haven't been on already.
I am right now, Kev, like my quads are like jonesing right now to go start pushing on the Peloton, because I haven't had my workout yet today. I'm trying to load up. You've heard me probably eat a couple cashews, so I'm trying to load up with a few low fat carbs, because today is a day that I'm going to go for like a major record today. I'm tired of I feel good. I'm tired of Orlovsky. Like, Orlovsky has set a number out there. I'm going to go chase that number, and so I'll report back and let you know how we do.
I can't wait. I'm sure we will talk about it Saturday. I look forward to it. And you know what? If you need motivation, just put a picture of me on that Peloton board. So you have motivation.
Listen, there are a lot of things in life that motivate me. When it comes to working out, I could not think of something that would motivate me less than looking at a picture of you. Nothing about your body says, hey, do this to be like that guy. Are you kidding me?
Nothing. Oh, the hate is so real, brother. Oh,
and it's honest too.
Oh, it's honest. Yeah. I'll see you, buddy. Big thanks to Boog. We always go at it on the weekends when it comes to our workouts. As you could tell, you are just basically getting a sneak peek of the chatter in the studio on Saturdays, in between games and half times. ESPN College Football Podcast. So we'll be back tomorrow with Joey Galloway. We'll be making our week 11 picks, and I continue to make ground, Taylor. I picked up another game on our boy Joey. Plus, we'll empty the notebook with one of our ESPN.com reporters and set the table for all the action over the weekend. Big shout out to Taylor Schwenk on the other side, of course, behind the scenes, making sure we can bring the podcast to you each and every Wednesday and Thursday. We will talk to you tomorrow.